respecting ourselves and our kids. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect, and I'm Melissa Ross, and thanks for listening. And just ahead, don't miss our conversation with David Lawrence Jr., founder of Florida's Children's Movement. You can join the conversation right now. It's 549-2937. Then later, a look ahead to Roots Weekend in Jacksonville. We'll tell you what that's all about. Plus, gypsy punk band fan favorites Gogo Bordello are celebrating their 20th anniversary in music. How you can see them this weekend. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, he's the Florida man who segued from newspaper publishing to founding an important statewide movement centered around kids. David Lawrence Jr., the former publisher of the Miami Herald, is the founder of the Children's Movement here in Florida. Now he's released an inspirational memoir about service and the importance of journalism as a bastion of democracy. It's called A Dedicated Life. Lawrence will be coming to Jacksonville next month for an appearance, and we have a preview right now as he joins us by phone. David Lawrence Jr., good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for being with us. And to connect with David Lawrence Jr., former publisher of the Miami Herald and founder of the Children's Movement here in Florida, give us a call. It's 549-2937 as we talk about kids and journalism and public service. 549-2937, emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax. So, David, after many years in the newspaper business, when you left the Miami Herald, you decided to focus full-time on Florida's children, particularly their early education years. What made you decide to make that transition?
Well, in 1996, I was still publisher of the Miami Herald, and Governor Childs, who was and is an especially good man, asked me to lead a statewide task force on school readiness. And though I have five children, I really had never heard of the subject. I spent a couple of years on this and still continued as publisher of the Herald. And ultimately, I decided this work was so important that it spoke to the future of community and country that I decided to retire and see what kind of difference I could help make for children to get off to a better start in school and in life.
You ended up raising millions of dollars for Florida's children, and you're still doing that work. How do you think Florida rates in terms of how we treat our kids, their welfare, their education, their prospects?
I think we've made progress, and that's really undeniable. But the fact of the matter is, we still have 40% of fourth graders who cannot read at minimally proficient levels. We have 325,000 perfectly legal children who have no health insurance. We paid $2,437 for a pre-kindergarten slot available to anyone and everyone, while we pay $20,000 plus to house an adult inmate, and we pay $50,000 plus to house a juvenile offender. We got a long way to go before this is the promised land for children.
It's 549-2937 to join us. And the children's movement in Florida starts with the position that investing in early childhood issues is the most important issue of our time. That you believe if we put a lot more focus and attention to the first 5 years of a child's life, that can make such a difference in so many parts of our society. How do you convince people of that? People that don't see the connections between investing in children when 90% of their brain is developed by age five and how that pays off later.
Well, it pays off very significantly. Though there is a moral imperative here, there is a very practical imperative. And it's not coincidental or unaligned, the reality of this. It's about jobs, 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 as Governor Scott used to say. It's about every chance for every child. It's understanding that 30% of children start school significantly behind, and then most of those get further behind. It's understanding that 3 out of every 4 17 to 24-year-olds in this country cannot enter the American military because of an academic challenge, a physical challenge, a substance abuse problem, a criminal justice problem. It's understanding that the research shows us that if 100 children leave first grade as poor or non-existent readers, 88 of them are still in the same shape in the fourth grade. We spend an extraordinary amount of money on police and prosecution and prison and $2 billion plus in public education remediation. Boy, we'd be smarter spending some of that money up front in children's lives in the really crucial years. A child can be semi-disastrously behind by the age of 4. So parents, knowledgeable, nurturing, loving, caring parents are critical to all of this. 65% or so of women with children between birth and age 5 work outside the home, so early learning centers and quality child care are really important.
Let me ask you as well, you recently touted the fact that you've gotten 100 Florida mayors from across the state to sign a pledge asking Governor Ron DeSantis to prioritize early childhood. You've gotten mayors from all over Florida, big city mayors from Miami, Orlando, St. Pete, small town mayors. This is a bipartisan effort that you've pushed through the Children's Movement of Florida. 100 mayors. Have you gotten Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry to sign on to this?
Well, I hope he will. I think it's really important that every possible mayor sign up for this. This isn't about Democrats or Republicans or no party affiliation people. It's about all of us and all of our families. This is actually the brainchild of the CEO of the Children's Movement, Vance Lupus, who's now elected to the state legislature and will be a prominent and helpful voice in all of this. This is about the future of community, state, and country. Just that simple.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with David Lawrence Jr., founder of Florida's Children's Movement. His new autobiography, A Dedicated Life, is out now. How important do you think early childhood education is? Give us a call at 549-2937. Now, in your book, David, you talk a lot about these issues, but you also talk a lot about your life in the newspaper business. It's no secret that the newspaper business is struggling mightily. As you look back on your career in newsrooms and you see where things are with newspapers today, where do you think newspapers went wrong in terms of transitioning to a digital model? And what do you think can be done to make sure local communities still have vibrant journalism covering and holding accountable local officials?
So one of the things that happened clearly is the internet. In a world where all of us are using some form of not only cell phones, but iPhones and so forth. Sadly, an extraordinary number of people don't buy newspapers anymore. Or if they get an app for one, they might look at a couple of pieces and somehow think they're informed. I lead an optimistic life, but I think the newspaper business is seriously under siege. What's going to happen? Ultimately, you got to figure out how to make online work as a pay-for model. I don't think anyone beyond the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Wall Street Journal have really figured that out. I think the principles of good journalism are the same as they have always been. Truth to tell, I read the Miami Herald every morning in print and for that matter, the New York Times. And when I look at the Miami Herald, I'm not looking basically for news about ISIS or Afghanistan or even Donald Trump. I'm mostly looking for what's happening in my own community. Same thing would be true of the Florida Times Union or whatever else. I'm not saying the other matters are inconsequential. They're very consequential. But there are a lot of places I can get that kind of information. But I'm not going to know what's going on or what's not going on in my own community if the local newspaper doesn't cover it or I don't get it. So there is an important future for newspapers. Frankly, I think in next 15 or 20 years or maybe even fewer, I think lots, if not most, newspapers won't have printed editions, or they'll only have them on Sunday. Newspapers, in the effort to continue to make money, and you need to continue to make money to stay in business, frankly, have cut the staffs significantly and severely, because the most expensive thing, the most expensive expense in a newspaper is, in fact, people. So if you have fewer people, you got fewer people to cover things and so forth and so on. I think we're still sorting it out. I will continue to read newspapers in print and want to read newspapers in print, but I also get three other newspapers on an app on my iPhone.
Now, you just said newspapers have to make money. What if they don't? What do you think about, let me ask you, what do you think about all of the nonprofit digital newspapers that have sprung up around the country and are really doing amazing work? Well, Texas Tribune comes to mind, Vermont Digger. Yeah, there's a number of them all over the country now.
Well, I think that's part of it. Though I think there are some very good models. You've named one. ProPublica is another. The Knight Foundation just announced it's going to spend $300 million investing in this topic. I think there are opportunities here, but the field is still pretty nascent at this point. You need major league, high-quality journalists who know how to ask questions of a lot of different folks, who have the right values, who are eager to be fair, who care deeply about the communities they serve.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with David Lawrence Jr., founder of the Children's Movement of Florida, former publisher of the Miami Herald. We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Now, David, as someone who spent your entire career in journalism, what do you think and how do you feel when you hear this field referred to as fake news?
Well, I think it's destructive to the republic, deeply destructive to the republic. I'm not suggesting that all journalists are superb, nor am I suggesting that every journalist works hard to get the fullest story, nor am I suggesting that all journalists are have fairness embedded in their souls. But I'm saying that in 35 years at seven newspapers, I never found anyone who was deliberately faking it, making it up, et cetera. If you destroy the checks and balances in our society, whether that's the House or the Senate or the presidency or the high court or the fourth estate, destroy those and we will have no checks and balances in this country, and we are ripe for the ruin of this republic.
And does that keep you up at night? Does that worry you?
Well, absolutely. When you have the President of the United States talking about the news media as enemies of the republic, first of all, that's ludicrous, simply ludicrous, in error, but ultimately very destructive. In a republic, you shouldn't be skeptical. You should be skeptical, but not cynical. And we have a hateful, angry climate now of significant distrust. We're a great big country of 330 million people. We need to figure out how to learn from one another, give each other the benefit of the doubt, listen to each other, and instead we're being divided over and over again. This country works best somewhere in the middle. It ought to be have an embracing ethos, and we're losing a good bit of that. If we lose the moral core of this country, we have lost what is most important in this country. It's not millionaires and billionaires. It's not guns. It's this country. These people have wanted to be a good people, do care about their neighbors, define neighbors widely and broadly. We lose those kind of things. We have nothing genuinely exceptional about this country.
Let us know where you get your news. Call us up at 549-2937. As we speak with former Miami Herald publisher David Lawrence Jr., founder of the Children's Movement in Florida. Okay, so you said you read the Miami Herald, the New York Times. You still read papers. You still read the print version of the paper. Is that right? You still get it delivered
Absolutely.
To your house.
Those two, I've read two newspapers this morning, and I've glanced at three others on apps.
And you are old school, David. Let's face it. I mean, so is a lot of people listening to us who still get the print paper. You know, when I was a kid, my brother delivered newspapers, and he had a huge paper route. And almost everybody in our neighborhood took the print paper, right? Well,
right.
I get up every morning now and walk my dog. And as I walk through my neighborhood, there are almost no newspapers going onto porches ever anywhere. And of course, change is inevitable and time marches on. But I have to tell you, I'm sad about that. It's the end of something. And transitions always happen, but it's still kind of sad because it's a whole culture, a whole way of life, a whole aspect of American life that has just faded away. And, you know, as someone who, you know, you actually came up in the business when newspapers were, they just occupied a different place in society maybe than they do today. Does it make you sad at all?
It makes me more worried than sad. It is sad. Because it's the significance of all of this is so important. I see the same thing you do. I frequently walk around in the morning quite early, and I see homes that many, many homes without a newspaper on the front lawn or on the front step or whatever else, more profoundly, more deeply, more meaningfully, we need to see things, all of us. We need to be informed clearly. I don't think you can get informed by listening to one TV show or doing any one thing. This country works best when the discussion is robust, but it's got to be a real discussion, and it needs to be based on actually knowing things. So if I want to talk about toll roads in my own community or the school system in my own community or whatever it might be, I actually need to know some things to have a valuable conversation with somebody else. So too many people are now saying, tell me when it's over and what it meant. That leads, incidentally, to the longest war in American history, which is on now and in Afghanistan. It leads to decisions that only a handful of people participate in. That's very unhealthy for this republic.
And it is, what's the saying, a republic, if you can keep it, as Benjamin Franklin so famously said. So you have these two...
Well, and there is nothing guaranteed about this republic.
That's right.
So... We could lose what we hold so precious. That's been true to some extent all through American history, Civil War being simply one example of it. I think social media, which is a very powerful instrument, has a huge impact. I'm on Facebook and look at it regularly. I started out because I wanted to see my grandchildren, but now I see much more. I see things on Facebook that are really well done, but I know to be literally fake news. I'm very significantly worried about all of this. I'm worried about that people don't know anywhere near enough about history, that history is taught less than it was in my time, and people don't understand the continuum. And what are the lessons of war and rebellion and so forth? What are the lessons of this country? Because they certainly can be applied. I do a book group for people in their 20s and 30s in my home. One of the books we read was Hitler Ascent, 1889-1939. I wanted people to read it because I wanted people to understand that Hitler came to power legally. It wasn't a bunch of stormtroopers who came in and shoved everybody out. It was a man who came to power legally in the terms of that time and did, of course, the untold evil that we know about.
Are you comparing our current leadership to the Third Reich? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that. I recently read Madeleine Albright's book, Fascism, A Warning, which I think is an important book for people to read.
I've read that book. And what she talks about is illiberal democracy, quasi-democracy, you know, not so much a total totalitarian society, but a slow and steady eroding of democratic norms that can come upon a society unawares. Is that where you think we're heading?
Well, I think there are signs in this world of nationalism that are scary. I love my country. I think that's good for people to love their country. But look at what is happening in Poland. Look at what is happening in Hungary. You can see instances all across the world where people are hungry for quick answers, and the strong man, or woman, I suppose, is appealing. Look at what's happening in the Philippines. You've got a man named Duterte who is doing some things that are appalling, yet an extraordinary number of the people support that. They look for quick answers. So no, I'm not suggesting this country is fascist, but I also recall that in 1935, Sinclair Lewis wrote a book called It Can't Happen Here. The point is, it can happen here. I think nothing is guaranteed. And if we live in a world where you're an MSNBC person and I'm a Fox person, if we only look for and listen to and read from things that support our own stance in this world, we're making and going down a very false path.
Well, I agree with you, David, and I thank you for your thoughts, and I encourage everyone to pick up David's book, A Dedicated Life. You'll be coming to Jacksonville in a few weeks.
Yes, and in fact, I'm doing things on two different days, one on April 26th, and I will speak to 250 or so folks. And then the next day, I'm doing a breakfast thing with 400 folks. So I'm eager. I love Jacksonville. I think it's a great community. I'm eager to be there.
We look forward to hosting you. David Lawrence Jr., thanks for joining the show.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Much more still ahead later. A preview of Roots Weekend here in Jacksonville. We'll tell you what that's all about. But right now, our Spring Pledge Drive is going on here at WJCT. Station manager David Luckin has a little bit more about that. Hey, David.
Well, hey, Melissa. I was going to say Michelle, but Michelle is on the board. You're over there behind the glass. I see you. Hey, you know what? We're going to follow up what you were just talking about with the information for folks that the Radio Reading Service right here reads the newspaper every morning and describes the photos. So for our visually impaired audience, we bring you the news every day. That's just part of what we do. When you give us your support at 353-9528, it's not just great programming, lunch and learns, all kinds of concerts. Tonight we have the Rippingtons, in fact, right here in our soundstage. So when you support us at WJCT, you're supporting the community, you're supporting all the great programming, events, and anything else we can bring you. News and information during the day, music at night, and lots of great entertainment on the radio on the weekends. So do your part now. We need your support at 353-9528. We're sitting at about 13,000. We've got 46,000 to go. And with your call, we can make that happen right now at 353-9528. And thank you so much for your support.
And in a moment, a preview of Roots Weekend in Jacksonville. Keep listening. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back. Roots Weekend, a convening of artists, activists, and organizers working together to build community. Roots Weekend Jax is coming up this weekend. You can be part of it here with more one of the organizers, Yvette Angelique Hyatter-Adams. Good morning. Good to see you.
Hi, Melissa. How are you this morning?
I'm really well. Okay, this is a program under the guidance of a national group called Alternate Roots.
Right.
What is Alternate Roots?
Okay, Alternate Roots, it's been around for about 43 years. It's a arts and social justice organization based in the South, in the Southern USA. Their mission is to really support the creation and presentation of original art in all of its forms that's rooted and community in the arts in the South. So the work that they do is really powerful because they work with artists and cultural workers to really combat all forms of oppression. And they're looking at racial justice, economic justice, anything that you can really imagine as it relates to social justice work and bringing that together with arts, activists, cultural workers.
What are some examples of how they've done that?
Well, you know, they situated out in the South. I mean, lots of opportunities, voters' rights, you know, engaging artists and community members in looking at how do we have people get up and vote, engage in the voting process is a big way. Another way is supporting people that are doing work with, like in Charlottesville, people that were doing work around race issues there, Also, you know, when it comes to some of these monuments, real popular subject here in the South. Mm. So there's different ways in which Alternate Roots members have engaged the communities in holding dialogues, having conversations, engaging people in the community around, let's look at these items, you know, how do we create the communities that we want? Empathy, love, belonging, how do we create that using our art practice?
There was recently a rally of activists around the city's Confederate monuments. Some are calling for an economic boycott of Jacksonville over this issue.
Right, right.
Is this going to come up at Roots Weekend?
I'm sure, because that's very fresh. That happened last weekend to take them down. You know, I'm sure that's going to be a topic of discussion. Of course, that's not only happening in Jacksonville. It's happening throughout the South. Other different cities in the South. So when we talk about artists and alternate roots, it's really supporting artists across the South in having those kinds of conversations.
So the idea is to uproot inequality through art and culture and social justice. What would you say to those who are skeptical and say, art isn't the same as political muscle? They don't believe art can change the world.
Well, you know, I beg to differ. There's a lot of experience and research that will differ, you know, with those kinds of conversations. You know, we all have different ways of learning and engaging and to develop what we know. Some do that through movie watching. Some do that through conversations. Some do that through writing. You know, when you look at all these modalities, they can be done in creative ways to get people really to spark. I mean, one of the things we're going to show, for instance, is at Babs Lab at the Cork Saturday night, we will be showing the film Unconditional Care. Now, here is a film that was made by one of our locals, Matt Colicella, and with support from Asghard Ali Saeed, where they told a story about the mass clinics run by Muslims in our community and how it's helped people who don't have insurance, who are underinsured, who are people that are really left out of the healthcare system. Now, this particular film was done, you know, with a creative flair. It promoted understanding, education, awareness, engaged the community in conversations about this. So at the end of the film, and it's been shown around the city a couple of times, people were like, wow, I didn't know this. What do I need to do? What's the call to action? Now, I'm sure this story has been told on the newspapers. It's been told in different forms. But the telling through this film is a transformative experience. That is an example of how we can use art in filmmaking, for instance, as a way to engage in these conversations and lead change.
Now, you're someone who left the corporate world to become a writer and an activist. So you've brought the skills you learned in the business world to this kind of work. How has that served you?
Well, it served me pretty well because I was an interrupter in the corporate world. I did work in diversity and inclusion in my corporate world. I led a group called Change Management Strategies, and it was both for inside and outside of the community. And in that work, it was activism inside of corporations, and I took that also out to the street. What I learned a lot and take a lot of skills around strategy, around engaging all quote unquote stakeholders. We don't tend to use that word in community organizing.
Yeah, that's not a word I would think I would typically associate with you, Yvette.
No, but my brain is right there, Melissa. I call people customers and I talk about stakeholders because we all have a stake in this game, right?
Yes.
We all have a stake in this community. It matters to us. It matters to me and pretty much everyone that I talk with about ways that we can engage each other and include each other and make sure that we all feel like we have a sense of belonging. And when we get down to it, people want to feel like they belong in their communities. So what are the ways that we need to have those conversations? What are the ways that we need to interrupt practices that has created exclusivity, divisiveness? What are some things that we could be doing together right now to undo that?
What will you take away from this Roots Weekend? What sort of tactics, I guess, or practices will people that mm-hmm. are liking your message, what will they learn?
The thing that this conference or convening, I'm trying to get out of the word conference, is really a convening.
Yeah, that's like stakeholders.
Absolutely. It really is. And, you know, conference, I've had to really retool my language, you know. So in this convening, it's really targeted towards people who are grassroots, on the ground, doing the work. How do we come together to have a shared sense of purpose, language, understanding? You know, we have people out in our community doing incredible work. How are they connecting the dots around how what they're doing is promoting awareness and justice, this creating change? So what people are able to walk away with is a shared language, a shared framework for how we look at what is oppression, what does that look like, and also a shared framework around strategies to undo oppression. I mean, we are human beings. Oppression has been created by people, so we can also undo what we've created.
Now, the weekend after Roots, you're curating a poetry and spoken word event at the Kummer Museum. It's the closing celebration of their Augusta Savage exhibit. She was a famed Harlem Renaissance era artist from the Green Cove Springs area. So I encourage everyone to go see that exhibit, mm-hmm. and they can come to see your event there as well. Tell us about that.
Yes, that's also a very powerful story. Augusta Savage, from the Jacksonville community, ultimately, you know, went to New York, education, ultimately stayed there and did a lot of work around arts education of the youth. She also really gave the world a new way to see the lives of Black and African American people. And so her work is really an important part of our story here in Jacksonville, and also our story as artists and activists, to really give people a new idea of what it was like to be in the community of Black folk. And that's what she did. So the part I love most about Augusta Savage is that she spent time with young people. And one of the things that I love doing in this community is mentoring girls, in particular young girls, teen girls, and to do that through their creative writing. So for this program, it's at 12 o'clock at the Kummer. I've curated poems from poets from the Harlem Renaissance era, as well as worked with four Douglas Anderson writers who will be reading, they've written, and they'll be reading work inspired by the Augusta Savage exhibit. So, and I'll be putting in a couple of my pieces as well. So that was a joy to work with these young writers to really learn about Augusta Savage, to see themselves and their own experience in Augusta Savage's story. So if there's a way that we can, you know, use this art as a way to help young people see themselves, who they are, how they belong in this space, you know, that's a very powerful experience for our young people.
And that's happening after your Roots convening.
Correct. Which,
and how can people be, let's explain how people can be part of both of these.
I love this. Well, the Augusta Savage event is happening the following weekend on April 6th. Roots Weekend is this weekend. So there's two different weekends.
It's a full weekend of stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's the next couple of weeks. And you know, April is National Poetry Month. So if you stick with my Facebook page, you get a poem a day.
Really?
Yeah, I've been curating
that.
I've been curating that for about the last 3 or 4 years. I try to, you know, introduce poetry into our communities and then have a little discussion about it.
So go to the website is?
For Alternate Roots, you want to go to www.alternateroots.org. Right on the front page, you can click on Roots Weekend Jacksonville.
Okay.
It will take you there, how to register. We still have a few openings for those who are interested.
Let me ask you as a quick follow-up. You know, you as I mentioned, you came down here from the Northeast, yeah. like a lot of people, mm-hmm. The New York area, you and your mm-hmm. husband. Mm-hmm. There are a number of people like that in Jacksonville, although not as much as other Florida cities. Jacksonville probably has the highest percentage of native-born Floridians of any major Florida city, and so there's tension there. And mm-hmm. when we did a segment last week on activists pushing for the removal of the Confederate mm-hmm. monuments in this city, I received a string of emails from a listener, mm-hmm. and he said to me, I'm tired of people moving down here in search of job opportunities and a warmer climate and ordering us, I'm paraphrasing, mm-hmm. but he said, ordering us around and telling us what we should be doing mm-hmm. and that our lives have been wrong and that mm-hmm. our positions are wrong. And mm-hmm. it's upsetting to native-born Jacksonvillians to mm-hmm. see this happening. And mm-hmm. so, and he had a lot more to say than just that. Yeah. But that was the gist of what he said. How do you react to that and what's your response to that?
Well, you know, part of this piece is that when you're talking about change, I mean, no one likes to see where they live and grew up and loved and valued not be seen as loved and valued like they've seen it. So, I mean, I'm originally from Washington, D.C. We moved from New Jersey. You know, we were in the Philadelphia market and South Jersey market. So I had a lot of culture shock going there and, you know, coming from D.C. I don't like when people talk bad about my city either. So mm-hmm. I can understand that. And, you know, we are in a space of change and people are locating and relocating and we're growing. It's not just a takeaway that's happening in the city. It's also life-giving, you know, opportunities. The opportunities are actually coming down here because people, you know, from different parts of the country are bringing that energy here as well. So we're just not coming and taking up space in Florida. We're also bringing opportunities to Florida. So so I just see it a little bit different. So I can understand why a person would feel a bit uncomfortable in that space because nobody likes to think of what they have as something that's not good. Here's the bottom line. Is that no matter where you are, whether you're new to a place or you relocate or whatever, is that you always want to feel like that you belong here. You want to feel welcome. You want to feel like you belong here. And when you go into a space and you don't feel like that, wow, you know, I don't feel like I belong in this space. You know, how can I be an engaged citizen and to participate and be a part of this community and feel like I belong here? We like to find ways to do that.
That's the message for anyone who feels that way. They should mm-hmm. come to Alternate Roots. Yvette Adams, Yvette Angelique Hyater Adams.
Thanks
for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
In a moment, Gogo Bordello celebrates 20 years of music. We'll take a listen after this.
353-9528. It's time for you to take five and call us right now. 353-9528. You're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT, where we bring you this local program every day where you get to ask the important newsmakers your questions. 353-9528 is a way to support this program and all the other great programs on the air right here on 89.9. Do it now. Take five. Call us. 353-9528.
The Florida Department of Health, making healthy tomorrows possible with the right vaccines today. The protection vaccines provide is universal, defending against disease from infancy through old age. Protection begins at thepowertoprotect.org.
The Jacksonville Symphony presents a world premiere April 4th with a piece by Mary Carr Patton composer-in-residence Courtney Bryan. The Symphony in 60 concert begins at 6:30 and every attendee is invited to the happy hour. This is a truly rare occasion. Information and tickets are at jacksymphony.org.
I'm Sid Hoskinson. We don't like to interrupt programming with Pledge, so won't you consider calling WJCT to give now? Individual support is our most reliable source of income. It's what helps pay the $500,000 bill for programs you rely on every day. Call 904-353-9528 or give online at wjct.org/radiouninterrupted. And thank you.
On the next Fresh Air, Lori Gottlieb, who writes the Dear Therapist column for The Atlantic. Her new book, Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, is about being a psychotherapist and being in therapy herself. She says she knows how hard it is to look at ourselves from another person's perspective, to see ourselves in ways that we haven't before. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Is having great wealth a great thing? Research shows that being set for life can change everything from your morality to your mental health. Psychology is helping us understand the behavior of folks like Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates, even our president. Money and the Mind. Next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Start wearing purple, wearing purple. Start wearing purple for me now. All your sanity and wits, they will all vanish, I promise. It's just a matter of time. So yeah, start wearing purple.
Welcome back. Finally this hour, famed gypsy punk band Go-Go Bordello is currently celebrating their 20th anniversary in the music business. I recently spoke with band leader Eugene Hutz about the group's new album, Seekers and Finders, and their tour. It includes a stop this week in Jacksonville. Take a listen. So the band is celebrating its 20th anniversary. That is an amazing milestone. So many bands don't make it to their first anniversary. What's the secret to Go-Go Bordello's longevity?
I don't know. I mean, there's several, like, you know, talks about it. There's several theories on that. My personal theory is just the very origin of that kind of musical activity, I suppose you can call it, the band exercises, is the answer to that. It's a very enjoyable, it's a highly enjoyable way to play music. You know, it's highly rejuvenating. It's very self-expressive. It's very non-task driven. There's a lot of improvisation. And I think that, you know, every person who's in the band, soul comes alive.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're known as a band of immigrants. You've got members from all over the world, Ukraine, South America, Africa.
Uh-huh.
How much does that add to the vibrancy of your sound and your appeal?
Well, it doesn't add anything. I mean, it is it. I mean, just we already used to it. We don't think about it. But that's just the sound is comprised from those very elements. It's way beyond being an influence. Literally, it's walking legs.
Yeah, it's the heart of who you guys are. Tell us a little bit about what we can expect at your show here in Jacksonville. You guys are coming to perform here.
One of the greatest things about, you know, putting out that kind of alert that it's a 20 years anniversary is like you basically drum up people into a mood for a kind of a mixed bag of, you know, the material from basically all albums. And that's exactly how it is right now, you know. Like very, very original fans get their kicks. All the young generation of fans get their kicks. And that's exactly like, it's kind of less conceptual, but more of a mixed fun bag at the moment.
It's a mixed bag people love. So Eugene, thank you so much for giving me a few minutes. Have a great show here.
Yes, thank you so much.
It's Go-Go Bordello. They'll be performing at Mavericks Live tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. Tickets at jaxlive.com. We're going to listen for a few minutes to Seekers and Finders off their latest album. Enjoy this for a minute.
Not all seekers will be finders.
Even the gurus only yet to know.
Yet there is a path you call your own.
Oh, they sound great. That's Gogol. I can't say that right. Gogol Bordello. Friday night at Mavericks. Gypsy punk and a global sound. That's going to be a great show. Now, we also want to quickly mention another amazing concert happening at our own WJCT soundstage tonight. It's Jazz Greats, The Rippingtons. You can get a few tickets still left at floridatheater.com. They are our partner in this amazing concert presentation right here in our building at WJCT, the site of so much fun stuff. Station manager David Luckin, you know, is here with me, and The Rippingtons is going to be another great show right here in our soundstage.
And it's basically our first one. We hope to have many more, but The Rippingtons tonight right here at WJCT. More importantly, give us a call, 353-9528, to show your support for First Coast Connect, the program you come to every morning to find out what's happening in your community. Well, now it's your turn to support that very program by calling us at 353-9528.
It's an easy way to support this show, 1A, which is up next, and every show you hear on the radio. If you listen every day, you need to make the call and just pledge the amount that fits your budget. Who else will ask you that for a service that you pay for? You know, David works so hard at making sure everything you listen to on our air is fresh and exciting and relevant to your life. We're going to be picking up a new show here and now, a big national show that will be new to Jacksonville area listeners starting next month. That's going to be exciting,
we
too.
We can't wait. A two-hour midday news program that will be vital and urgent and definitely relevant to everything that's going on in our lives.
That's right. So if you value this programming, if you listen to 89.9 on the air or stream us or podcast us, whatever you do, we want you to be part of our efforts here by making that pledge at 353-9528 or online at wjct.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. 1A is up next, and on tomorrow's show, our Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.